Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-Hour Home Care. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pop Health Podcast. My name is Gavin Ward, and I'm the host of Pop Health Podcast, and today we're at the beach. That's right, everybody. We are here at the Newport Beach area with Dr. Josh Luke, who is our guest. Josh is spending some time, a little bit vacation, a little bit of work, spending some time with his family. And we're also along with co-host Ryan Berger. First of all, Dr. Josh Luke, welcome and thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Gavin. You guys have always been very supportive of the National Readmission Prevention Collaborative, and I know you and Ryan and your organization were a couple of our earliest supporters and followers, so thanks for having me.
No problem. Happy to be here, Josh. And Ryan Berger is joining us as well for his second appearance as co-host. Welcome, Ryan.
Hi, Gavin. Thank you. Good to be here again.
Thanks so much. And Ryan, this actually location holds a special place for you. I think you met someone pretty special in your life in this area. Is that correct?
My wife.
Ah, very good. Here in the Newport Beach area?
Well, it was closer to Tustin, but Orange County.
Okay, very good. Well, I want to introduce our guest today, Dr. Josh Luke. Dr. Luke is the founder of the National Readmission Prevention Collaborative. He's also a family man. He is married, has two sons and a daughter. And Josh also has quite a bit of wealth of experience in the healthcare field. He's been a hospital CEO, including a role as an interim CEO. He's also been an administrator at a skilled nursing facility, or actually played multiple roles in the skilled nursing world. And he's currently a national speaker in healthcare change. This year, Josh also wrote a book called Readmission Prevention, Solutions Across the Provider Continuum, which was a bestseller this year. And he's also currently an adjunct professor at the University of Southern California, Price School of Public Policy. Josh, thanks so much again for joining us today. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into healthcare and what you're up to these days?
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's an honor, and lots of people talking about the Pop Health podcast. So congratulations to you all for a successful launch and for the support you've given to the National Readmission Prevention Collaborative. I think, Gavin, you and Ryan know my story well, but for those who don't, I dreamed as a high school and college student of working in sports marketing. And really, as I did that, I was able to do some really cool things early in my career. At age 26, I was representing some baseball players and some professional golfers and really doing what I thought was my dream. But after a couple years of doing that, I realized I really wasn't as fulfilled as I wanted to be, and I had just gotten married and was talking to my wife about how I thought I might want to do something different. About that point in my life, my grandmother was bouncing back and forth between a nursing home and a hospital and a long-term acute care facility, and I was approached by somebody to be the director of marketing and admissions for a skilled nursing facility, and at the time it seemed like a big leap. But as I talked about it with my wife and prayed about it and went for the interviews, I saw that this might have been the opportunity I was waiting for. And I got the organization, which was Life Care Centers of America, to agree to put me in their administrator and training program while I served as their director of marketing and admissions. And I'd always felt I was a natural leader, and this might be my opportunity to enter the healthcare sector as a leader. And so within a few short years of that, I had become a nursing home administrator and was offered the opportunity to go be the CEO of a hospital in Orange County, California. And the reason the nursing home preparation was appropriate was because this hospital was surrounded by nursing homes, but had lost a lot of its volume. The doctors had lost confidence in the hospital. So the nursing homes right across the street, driveway to driveway, were literally taking patients to another hospital. So the operators of this hospital asked me to come in and be their administrator and see if I could just revive those nursing home relationships, because that enough would have been a successful proposition for them to return to profitability. So I was very fortunate, because after 4 years at that first hospital in Anaheim, which is now closed, I was recruited to go across town to a very special place here in Orange County, Western Medical Center in Anaheim. It serves not only the people of Anaheim, but it also is the emergency department for the happiest place on earth, of course, Disneyland. So had a great experience there for 3 years, and then ended up going to an acute rehab hospital out in Las Vegas. And I remember when I was offered that position, there was some transition going on at the company I was working at here in Orange County. So it was the right time. And I went out to Las Vegas, and I remember saying to the guy hiring me, "Hey, why me? Why acute rehab? Why Las Vegas?" And he said, hey, look, acute rehab is a niche. You've worked on the acute side as acute hospital CEO. You've worked on the skilled nursing side as a SNF administrator. We think if anybody can learn the acute rehab sector quickly, it would probably be you. And we see all the hospitals in Las Vegas opening acute rehab floors. And we're having trouble getting those patients out to our hospitals because that organization had two or three hospitals there in Las Vegas. And that was really, Gavin, where my passion and that fire started burning, that the match was lit and the flame started burning, if you will, to figure out why in the heck acute care providers aren't more open with and communicative with post-acute providers. Because I'd been for 7 years a CEO, and now I'm back on the outside as an acute rehab CEO. Acute rehab is really post-acute care. That's where I started saying, man, I was part of the problem for 7 years, and I got to fix this. And now that the Affordable Care Act was passed, it was an opportune time for me to say, hey, I'm not sure how to do this quite yet, but I got to figure out how to bring people together and teach them the important nature of each other's business, because there was complete ignorance on the acute side to what you guys do on the post-acute side. And for the most part, vice versa. Although post-acute providers are really challenged with understanding the acute sector, they really can't without being there. They can understand some of the nuances, but not all. So that journey from skilled nursing administrator in training to acute hospital CEO to acute rehab in a different market really opened my eyes to the fact that the time had really come for, not now that the Affordable Care Act was passed, the time had really come for acute and post-acute providers to get together and to have a forum somewhere, somehow, an independent forum on how to relate to each other and improve the care continuum. And that is really kind of what started that fire that a couple years later led to the formation of the National Readmission Prevention Collaborative.
That's amazing. So obviously you've got a long history, you've got the knowledge, the experience. Could you go into a little more detail about what the National Readmission Collaborative is all about and kind of how that specifically got started and from day one to where we are now, kind of that journey that you've been on?
Sure. So as you guys have already heard in just a few short minutes, I can't keep a job for very long. So I finally found a good use for the fact that I've had so many jobs and worked in so many industries. And that was, I was speaking, and I found myself getting asked to speak a lot more often at the end of 2011 and more in 2012 at healthcare events because, A, I enjoy speaking. I had a passion for it. But at the same time, because I'd worked on the acute side and the post-acute side, when I was done speaking, people were coming up to me. And I remember one conference in San Diego back in the beginning of 2012. There must have been 20 people that wanted to speak to me when I was done. And the promoter was like, hey, we got to start the next session. You guys got to sit down. And they were pretty adamant. No, I need to talk to Josh because he's worked on the other side. And I need somebody to help me understand what goes on the other side. And one of the people in that line was somebody who said, hey, you ought to write a book on readmission prevention. The American College of Healthcare Executives is seeking out a book of this nature. Who better to write it than somebody that's worked on both sides of the post-acute and the acute spectrum? And so I approached the American College of Healthcare Executives about that possibility and very quickly was contracted. And as soon as that became a reality, I'd never written a book before. I'd written a dissertation and dabbled in doing some writing, but that was a pretty daunting task I had ahead of me. So I said, hey, I want to form a website where people across the country can come share with me what they're doing to prevent readmissions and to improve the care continuum. And so I started the California Readmission Prevention Collaborative. And very quickly, within about 3 weeks, actually, I had so much interest that I went back and formed the National Readmission Prevention Collaborative because a lot of the case studies that were coming in were from outside of the state. A lot of the elite post-acute providers, such as 24-hour home care, yourselves and others, that really quickly were the early adopters, said, Josh, you're onto something here. We need this. How can we help? How can we contribute? I realized that California was really limiting what we needed to do. And in fact, with all due respect to my home state, I would say that we are not one of the most advanced states in terms of coordinating care because we're such a large state that's so diverse. When you go to other states, they have unified health information exchanges, just one for the whole state. You know, they have organizations, entities where they've all come together at the same table. And when you get to California, you have, you know, three or four major metropolises, if you will, you know, and 100 different providers in some post-acute spaces. So it's going to take us a little longer. I definitely think that the National Readmission Prevention Collaborative has shortened that curve. So the California Readmission Prevention Collaborative really doesn't exist anymore, because I put it to bed within about 4 months because it really didn't have a purpose after the National Collaborative took off. So the original goal, Ryan, the short answer to your question is the website and the collaborative were formed so folks such as yourselves, 24-hour home care, could send us best practice case studies on what you were doing to prevent readmissions, and not just prevent readmissions, because really quickly this website became much more than a readmission prevention website. It's really about care coordination. It's about the triple aim of healthcare. It's about how do we improve care coordination, how do we do it for less cost, and how do we improve patient satisfaction. So that's kind of a couple-minute summary of how we got where we are, and the case studies portal on our website is pretty impressive. It took a couple years, but when I researched the web, I couldn't find any websites that had more than three or four. And now we're up to 30 or 40. They're diverse. They cover everything from, you know, the five, soon to be six diagnosis categories that are in the readmission penalty to a hospital subsection, a nursing home subsection, assisted living subsection, a CHF subsection, everything across the board, home care, private duty nursing, hospice. So anybody who wants can submit a case study for free. The website for that, you can email the podcast, I'm sure, and they'll connect you with me, or you can just email it to info@nationalreadmissionprevention.com. I would love to hear from anybody listening about what you're doing. All we do is edit what you send slightly to make sure it's readable, and we post it. If there's a logo on there, we'll probably cut that off. But you can put in there the name of your company, the name of your organization, name of your hospital, name of your skilled nursing facility. We're not worried about promoting your product. We are more concerned about sharing with folks around the country how to best coordinate care. And the last thing I'll say on that is, when I ran hospitals, they were all safety net hospitals. We served the neediest of the needy. So when I started this website, people were like, you know, a lot of people were questioning my motive, saying, what's his real intent? My real intent was to get information in the hands of people like myself in my previous roles that had no access to resources whatsoever. And that was true in my skilled nursing roles as well. I mean, skilled nursing administrators are such admirable folks. Everybody who works in a SNF is. Everybody who works in post-acute care is. We all have a heart for that. But what I will say about skilled nursing is, if you went to a 100-bed facility with 300 or 400 employees, you might only find one or two college-educated employees that work at that facility, because as you all know, it's a very thin margin, and it's folks that work there that have a heart for caring. And so there's not always the resources to hire additional staff. So those that website, the best practice care portal, was really there to provide resources around the country and to provide one website where people could come to see thought leaders from around the country on care coordination and readmission prevention.
Thanks, Josh, for putting that together. I know the organization we work with, we've learned a lot just reading those success stories in care collaboration and care transitions, and it's helped us improve. That brings us to the phrase of the day. Sometimes we have a word of the day, but today we'll have a phrase of the day. And the phrase of the day will be best practices. Again, that's going to be best practices. And if you email Gavin or info@pophealthpodcast.com with that phrase, you'll be entered into the raffle for the Pop Health Podcast t-shirt. Please don't forget your t-shirt size as well. Again, the phrase of the day is best practices. So Josh, we've seen the NRPC grow. We've also seen a shift kind of not just to necessarily talking about readmissions and care transitions and care coordination, but also ACO and bundled payment. I'll have a question for you in just a second about that. But you've been throughout the country, pretty much from the West Coast to the East Coast. You had a lot of folks participate as speakers, including Dr. Eric Coleman, who we've seen throughout the country. CMS in different areas have also participated in your events. When you initially thought of the NRPC, did you think you'd be able to get the participation of those folks? And how does it feel to have those folks participate in your events?
Thanks, Gavin. That's cool. You know, I never really thought of it in that manner. And the one thing I didn't answer in Ryan's last question was when all that started. The NRPC officially started in October of 2013. That's when I officially got a website and started it. And so, no, I would have never imagined that, because I really never thought of it going that way. In fact, we did our first conference actually right here in Newport Beach in February of 2014, which is not even barely 18 months ago, we sold it out in like 3 weeks, and we actually, you know, truth be told, sold an extra 100 tickets because we knew people would no show. The fire marshal was alerted the day of our first event here in Newport Beach, and we decided that because we didn't want anybody to have a bad flavor in their mouth about this brand new organization, we would run it back very soon in a local market, which we did in Anaheim, I think in May of 2014. We had 602 people walk through our doors that day, and that's when I really went home that night, and I looked at my wife, and Martina and I just talked about it, and we had recently made the decision that I couldn't keep working for a health system and run this organization. Remember, the organization wasn't started to be a business. It was just started to position myself and other thought leaders as readmission prevention experts so we could collect these case studies, and it grew so fast. So I remember the first time I met Dr. Coleman, I was in awe. And actually, another kind of sign, Gavin, that Josh Luke was had some experience that meant something to some folks was I was put on advisory panel. It was a strategic scientific advisory panel was the name of it for an organization back east. And when I got there was only two other people on the panel. It was Dr. Eric Coleman and Dr. Stephen Jenks, who used to work for CMS and is kind of the godfather of readmissions. And I remember sitting in that room that day, and I'm rarely speechless, but I couldn't believe that people held me in that high regard. And this is maybe 5 months after I founded the collaborative, and I was just so honored. I was honored because I had the opportunity to meet Dr. Jenks, who's speaking at our Philadelphia summit coming up on September 22nd. And Dr. Eric Coleman, who's spoken at almost all of our events, and he's just so gracious. And really what another of those monumental things that really opened my eyes is a couple weeks after I met Dr. Coleman, I asked him if he would come speak at one of my events, and he was able to work that out. And he called me a couple days afterwards and said, hey, I love what you're doing. I would be honored to support your events in any market should my schedule accommodate. And any other way I can help, let me know. And I was speechless, quite frankly. But what I saw is someone else who really is a champion in this space saying, hey, there's pockets, there's silos, there's lots of people trying to do different things, but you and the National Readmission Prevention Collaborative have stumbled onto an opportunity to bring the acute and the post-acute together. But also, my experience is such that I'm pretty real. And a lot of people say, hey, Josh always talks about the elephant in the room, and he's willing to talk about what others won't and to say things that others won't. And I think that's all true, and I'm fine with that. I realize, though, that a lot of what I'm talking about are regulations, legislature that many times is outdated. I use the word antiquated. I've used words like silly, doesn't make sense. Sometimes I might have said they're a joke even. But because they're 30 years old, and it was a different time. And it was a time when the federal government said, hey, we want to be able to provide financing for seniors to stay in good health. But what we don't want is our capitalistic society to encourage inappropriate behavior from providers, which are hospitals and post-acute providers and physicians. And the tide has turned almost 180 degrees now to where the federal government said, hey, we still want to continue to pay for health care for those who need it. But at the same time, if we're going to continue to do this, we have to really change it to a value-based model. And I'm always quick to tell people, I am not a proponent or opponent of the Affordable Care Act. I'm just here to say, hey, I grew up at the tail end of the fee-for-service era, and I had a lot of questions being a 32-year-old CEO. A lot didn't make sense to me. And I still continue to question. But what I do now, and Gavin and Ryan, you guys know this, is you guys have seen me speak and interacted with me enough to know, most of the industry is in a transition, and that transition wasn't moving at a snail's pace even until January of this year. In January of this year, we saw three or four things happen in the 6 months after that really are the federal government's way of saying, we're tired of waiting. You will transition. But what I have always done as the founder of the NRPC when I speak is just speak what I see to be the truth, which is if you picked up the 2,000 pages of the Affordable Care Act and read them, and looked at the model that it is designed to produce a value-based delivery model, it looks nothing like the fee-for-service model. And some of these transitional care efforts people are doing still don't look like that. They're just a halfway effort or sometimes a third of a way effort to transition from the old model to the new, because people have always put their faith in the fact that we're going to be able to get the government to change their mind. It's really clear to me that the feds aren't changing their mind. And, you know, regardless of your political affiliation, a lot of the Republican candidates are running on the platform that they're going to undo the Affordable Care Act. And I've yet to meet anybody in D.C. or an attorney that thinks that's possible.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'll say on that is, can they pick certain parts apart? Of course they can. Can they pick apart the exchanges? Can they pick apart the entitlements that everybody has to have insurance? Sure. But can they undo the ACA? And the real question, Gavin and Ryan, is should they? Because they're transitioning to a value-based model that focuses on the patient. And I think when you really want to talk about what's right in healthcare, the term patient-centered care is where we should all be focused. It's not value-based. It's not volume to value. It's not all that. It's patient-centered care. And the ACA is truly an attempt to get there.
So with success right out of the gates, I mean, you saw it instantly, large turnout from day one. You had to do a second one just a few months later. You've been all over the state and now outside of the state. What were, if any, some of the challenges to kind of getting this thing going and as widespread as it is today?
That's a great question, Ryan. We've had support from across the country. You know, there's always questions, especially when you go into a new market. I remember one new market we went into this year. It's a very tight-knit market, and they're doing great work in care transitions. And they kind of scratch their head, like, who are these people, and why are they coming here? And we're doing great work, and are they a threat to that? And is there a, I think the main question always is, what's the real incentive here? What's the secret? Why are they really coming? Is there a business angle? And I wish I had an answer for that. I'm not smart enough to capitalize on this financially as much as others would. I have a passion for just getting this right. A passion for focusing on the patient. You know, I started by telling you I got into this industry because I saw my grandmother's care as substandard. Caretakers couldn't even tell me the most basic things about her. When I called to find out where she was, it took them 3 or 4 minutes to figure out she hadn't been in the facility for 2 days. And then when I did catch up to the right facility, they would say, oh, we don't have her chart yet. She's only been here 48 hours. And that didn't make any sense to me as a sports marketing guy when I was 26 years old.
Right.
You know, and so I realized, if it doesn't make sense to me, it doesn't make sense to most. So I'm in this for the patient, and it has become a business. We are officially a not-for-profit now in the state of California. I'm really excited about that. I'm not really sure how to operate a not-for-profit, but I've hired some folks that can, on a very limited budget, I might say, that it can help me translate those things so I do it right. Our goal this year is to donate $25,000 to the Alzheimer's Association. You can do that on our website. We're also putting together a team for the Orange County Alzheimer's Walk on November 14th, Luke's Legion. And we have a website that's been launched for that as well, with the goal of raising an additional $5,000 just for that event. And we're halfway there. We have raised over $12,000 and donated that to the Alzheimer's Association so far this year. If you've read my book, and by the way, my book's available at ache.org. That's American College of Healthcare Executives.org. Click on publications. You'll see it there. It's a green cover with a white arrow on it. And it's called Readmission Prevention Solutions Across the Provider Continuum. And regardless of which space in the post-acute sector you're in, there's a chapter written directly for you. And I think you'll really learn about the continuum. We used the textbook for our class at USC, and the students said when they were interviewing some administrators, they actually felt more educated at this point in time than some of the administrators, because they'd read the book and really understood the transition from volume to value and where it's going to take them. So that is really the best way to describe. We're a not-for-profit. We started elsewhere, and we're learning as we go, and we just want to help with this transition to patient-centered care.
It's great to hear about the not-for-profit official status of your organization, Josh. I know you've been working on that for a little bit, and supporting the Alzheimer's Association is pretty neat. I've known them for many years and I also support them, so it's neat to see you do that. Now, one thing you mentioned, or I guess everyone is aware of, is change in our industry, and people being open to change or not being open to change. I know one of your messages is for hospital systems to add additional revenue streams. How has the reception been for hospitals, at least in your interactions with them, to add additional revenue streams? I know certain groups own assisted livings. Some groups own private duty home care. Tell me about that type of reception you've seen.
Well, that's a great question, Gavin. And that's one thing that, you know, as much as I've been in this space for a couple of years now, I'm trying to always stay in front of things and update people on what's coming next. And ACOs, bundled payments. I think ACOs, people have really been reading and heard enough about that for the time being. Bundled payments are absolutely a focus for the next couple of years. And whether you're an acute provider, an acute provider or a post-acute provider, bundled payments are going to impact you. And it's important that you study those and understand. So if you're unfamiliar with that, CCJR, which is Comprehensive Care for Joint Replacement, was a mandate that came down a few months ago. And that definitely impacts post-acute providers as well, because you need to be positioning to support acute providers and the initiators and conveners of these orthopedic bundles. And I will tell you some stats that I've seen from the clients that I work with, because I do limited consulting, mostly just with large health systems that want to get right to patient-centered care. But those that have orthopedic bundles are reporting that less than 50% of their hospital discharges are going to SNF. And I want to applaud that, because even though I'm a SNF administrator, and you guys have heard the term SNF avoidance, it's a term that's becoming more and more common, because the value-based model is to avoid post-acute care in an institution if possible, if safe care can be given at home. So I think that's encouraging. But in terms of what your specific question about, Gavin, it gets back to fraud and abuse waivers and regulations that have been around for 20 or 30 years, where hospitals were really hesitant, they would not partner with post-acute providers because of choice and anti-steering. And of course, if you've ever been to an NRPC conference, we talk about that for about half the day, because we're trying to encourage post-acute providers to do the right thing, provide a high level of care, so they will be the preferred provider. But you've seen different announcements come across from across the country in the last couple months about acute providers partnering with one post-acute provider and even doing revenue share and joint venture. Some of these folks are applying for fraud and abuse waivers with the federal government. Others are writing the Fed saying, hey, we're going to apply, but we're going to do it anyway, because you forced us into a position where we have to coordinate care and we're responsible for the care provided by these post-acute providers. Others are just saying, hey, this is clearly where it's going, and we need to be able to partner with one or two or maybe three post-acute providers, usually with skilled nursing and institutionalized care. It would be hard to go down to one, but you see most organizations picking five or less that are geographically complementary. But when it comes to home health or non-medical home care or private duty nursing, you're seeing in most cases one. And what I tell my clients is, look, you're not going to be able to handle all the volume if this is done right. So that one provider needs to have a couple other providers on queue to support them. And that's kind of non-traditional too, but at the same time, it's the wave of the future. So is this going on? It's absolutely going on. The term that CMS likes to use when you talk to them about, hey, this condition of participation in Medicare requires that we offer choice and that we don't steer. So first of all, let's separate those two issues. This is America and we have choice, and that regulation is never going away. Patients get to go where they want to go. Now, when it comes to steering, the Medicare Payment Advisory Commission has already recommended that CMS address the steering issue and that they allow soft steering. Perhaps an even bigger note coming from our federal government is CMS is now mandating steering in the new bundles and ACO models that they are releasing in the last 6 months. They're requiring that the bundle initiator convener use a 3-star SNF or above. By its definition, that is steering. So when you ask someone from CMS, as I have, and I have, Gavin, as you mentioned, really been fortunate enough to have folks like Dr. Eric Coleman and medical directors and regional directors from CMS come to our events, and I have the opportunity to chat with them privately. I've been able to establish great relationships with a few of them and in ongoing communication, and it's been great. The words that they use, because they obviously have to be very careful, because they're the first to acknowledge, hey, we have a couple of initiatives that contradict each other, and one's 30 years old and the other's new, but at the same time, we need to tread lightly as to how we approach this, because we want to get it right. The term they like to use is give the patient the opportunity to make an informed decision when you're discharging them. And I think that's fair. I've heard other organizations say, hey, we need to have an objectively defensive strategy for why we picked these five SNFs and not another five SNFs. And I think that's fair. We talked about offline a few minutes ago, and I'll just say it now. Really, when these regulations were put in place, it was to prevent hospitals from gaming the system for financial incentives by driving volume. It was to prevent hospitals from partnering with post-acute providers strictly for the sake of driving volume and profitability. And it was also to prevent hospitals and post-acute providers from partnering with physicians just for the sake of driving volume. So when you can show as an acute provider that you're partnering with one or a handful of post-acute providers as a exclusive provider in a narrow network, and you can bring them, you have to clearly show value added, you have to show a value add for that provider. And if it's not strictly a volume play, I think that's what most organizations are doing. So are you seeing that? Yes. The more senior executives, if you will, are a little more hesitant to do this. The newer, younger executive that are kind of new to this, that have only known population management, a lot more willing to do it. But I would argue that those who are late to the game are going to unfortunately suffer the financial consequences, because all of the new incentives are about coordinating care and partnering. And I'll close that by asking a really simple question that gets back to the fraud and abuse waivers. Why is it that health systems have been able to own a skilled nursing facility or own a home health, or go across the street and buy a skilled nursing facility or home health, but they can't walk across the street and say, hey, let's partner, joint venture, we'll bring you some additional clinical and quality skills, and you share some profits with us? That just doesn't make any sense in this day and age.
Change is tough, Josh, and you've addressed that issue quite a bit, and I know you have some events coming up here. We'll ask you about those dates and locations in just a second here as we're getting towards the end. One thing you mentioned earlier in the podcast is you're trying to raise money for the Alzheimer's Association. I know not just that effort, but just your efforts in general with care transitions and better care for our seniors have allowed you actually to receive a nomination. SeniorServe, many of you may know, were our guest previously. SeniorServe is actually putting on their fifth annual Senior Hero Care Awards in October, and Josh is actually a nominee for one of those awards. And if you go to the Senior Care Hero Awards website, forgive me, I don't have that offhand, but if you do a quick Google search or look at seniorserve.org, they'll redirect you. But again, that's Senior Care Hero Awards, and you can vote for Josh on their website. Time is running short, so I'm going to name off some of the events that Josh will be leading coming up here. I know we have one in Northern California in Oakland on September 10th. We have an event, you mentioned Philadelphia. When's that event in Philadelphia again?
Yeah, so I'll just ramble off the upcoming NRPC events. September 10th in Oakland, California, and all these are available at nationalreadmissionprevention.com. Philadelphia, September 22nd, Miami, September 24th, Dallas, October the 12th, and then in Los Angeles, we'll cap off the year November 12th at Good Samaritan Hospital. There's also a couple of really cool events I'm speaking at nationally. If you're interested in the Aging 2.0 event, which is really a great new organization, they're not too new anymore, but they're out of Northern California, that's about innovation in the post-acute sector, is coming up here in September. You can check out their website. I'm also speaking at the Louisville Innovation Summit. Louisville is really trying to position themselves as the post-acute hub nationally. I think they're already there, but they've asked me to come present there. I'm really excited about that. And I'll be speaking at the ACA event as well, the American Healthcare Association event, convening all the national skilled nursing facilities down in San Antonio. I think that's in November, actually. Great. October, sorry.
Great, Josh. Sounds like you'll be traveling near and far for all these different engagements. Ryan Berger, will you be joining Josh in Philadelphia? I know it's a special place for you.
Born and raised, I wish I could. Maybe I can figure out a way to convince the bosses to send me there. But I just wanted to say to the listeners out there, as somebody who has read your book, as somebody who has heard you speak several times, for those of you who haven't, get out there and listen. For those of you who have, there's new information being given at every single event. Go back again if you've been, but not recently. Thank you so much for being a guest here today. It's been a pleasure once again talking to you and picking your brain and hearing more about what's going on with you and with the family and with the organization. So thank you.
Josh, 30 seconds, biggest takeaway.
Well, thank you guys for including us. You know, the biggest takeaway for me is organizations like yourselves that say, hey, this guy, we're going to take Josh and the NRPC for what they are, as people who just want to move this forward. And I found the same with 24-Hour Home Care and other organizations. I want to thank you guys for that. We've got to do better by our wives and daughters than we did by our grandparents and our parents. And you guys have heard me say that when I speak. So with that said, Gavin, I didn't get a chance to mention, we're going to be forming, we already formed the National ACO and Bundled Payment Collaborative. I'll have Gavin list that website. It's NACOBPC, and I know that's a mouthful, www.thepopheltherapy.com. But really, that's where we see kind of the decision makers on the acute side focus more on the bundle. So we figure that we can extend our reach by going there. So I want to thank Gavin and 24 Hour Home Care and Ryan. Gavin is a nationally certified readmission prevention professional. It's a certification you can get on our website. The website's at nationalreadmissionprevention.com. We have a newsletter just like Gavin does. His is great. Ours, we do monthly now, get a lot of good feedback on it. You can sign up for all that stuff either at nationalreadmissionprevention.com or you can just contact the podcast. Thank you guys so much for having me. I'll look forward to joining you and seeing everybody at our conferences.
Sounds great, Josh. Everybody, thanks so much for joining us today, and we will talk to you soon. Take care, everybody.